Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. So I am, as I record this, I'm sitting in front of the wood stove indoors because it's dark outside and it's cold and we got some fresh snow, and I thought it might be better to do this without shivering. So, how has your week been? This week, I mailed a letter to my granddaughter Bree, who's working in Mexico this winter at a hostel somewhere along the Baja. I sent her a package earlier too with Neosporin for her mosquito bites. And it was after I mailed the letter, I read that the postal service in Mexico can be somewhat unreliable. So I realized she might never get either of the things I sent. But she does have internet at a local cafe. So Bree, this episode is for you. Wow, have you seen the sunsets lately? I'm feeling a need to go deep into the sense of place in this episode. Sense of place can be what you see around you or the landscape of your mind. Maybe it's the season. As Chris in the Morning, a radio host on the old Northern Exposure series, said, you know, it's hard not to become reflective during the 3 months leading to the winter solstice. If winter is slumber, and spring is birth, and summer, summer's life, so then autumn rounds out to be a reflection. It's a time of year when the leaves are down, the harvest's in, the perennials are gone, Mother Earth's just closed up the drapes on another year, and it's time to reflect on what's come before. I think Ken Lane was feeling reflective and even poetic when he recorded this latest episode before a live audience. Please bear in mind that the audio quality is not his best, but he was on his own that night from the sound of it. Our episode of Desert Oracle Radio today was produced by Ken Lane on December 8th, 2023. It's so new, I don't yet see a title, but it ties in with the sense of place in his mind. We carry stories with us like a collection of stones, and on occasion, we arrange them in new ways as we take them out again. This episode is like that. Enjoy.
Now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
A winter blue. Solstice coming any day now. The shortest day and the longest night of the year. Celebrated since the oldest times. The wine jars are open in time for the last great feast. Before a long, lean winter. A time of generosity, a time of cheer. Of cold weather chaos. When kings and queens serve the servants, the cooks at the monastery stomped around with orange peels over their eyes, serving as eyeglasses, reading nonsense from upside down Bibles. Slaves with their masters. The masters enjoyed it more than the slaves. The boss presents a gift to the worker who could take it all at any time but does not. With enough good cheer, the boss might be the boss for another long year. Highway 395 through the Eastern Sierra, 35 minutes south of Mount Pine. A December dusk in the Great Winter Sierra. The year of 911. Making good time. The old Jeep Cherokee, the Cadillac of Jeeps. There's nothing as enormous and beautiful as the Eastern Sierra's jagged edge in winter's fading light. And that purple light, there was a jittery light on the northern horizon. It transformed in an instant to an enormous manta ray hovering over the sand and the brush. Transfixed and still barely aware, I was hurtling down the highway at 75 miles an hour. Been overwhelmed. Solid lights on each corner. A jerky spotlight gleam from its belly on the sagebrush on the ground beneath. I steered off the dirt road over a cattle cart, rumbling into the sand. Soft brown lights on the three corners, radiating energy. It was menacing and it was beautiful. I could not look away. The Jeep lurched to a stop. It disappeared. where something fantastic had just happened. Materialized from the ether to put on this peculiar display for almost nobody at all. And now blinking into the deep dark sky with only a few high clouds still catching a faint glow of the departed daylight. A tiny point of bright light makes a beautiful arc around over the Owens Valley. Was that it too? Darkness on the desert. And it's about time. It's about time and place. Well, this place is called Wonder Valley because everybody's wondering what you're doing there. Sometimes you're headed up Adobe Road, thinking of joining the Marines again. And all that stands between you and the few and the proud is a last-minute turn on Amboy Road. I wonder what's out that way. Meth shacks, heart attacks, water tanks and rattlesnakes, TV antennas reaching up into the bone-dry sky, like the arms of Joshua, from the cinder block walls tumbling down. Should have maybe joined the Marines back in town. Cash the VA check, gas up the old rack. The back way to Vegas, El Camino down Desierto. La Migra hiding at the Vista Point, ready to haul your ass away for being hungry and desperate enough to want a job. Jackrabbits dashing across the two-lane, not much to do here at night, just wait for the rumble and wait for the lights, when it's almost too late. That's when you run, and if you don't make it, there's plenty more where you came from. And then you're stomping through the sagebrush, car parked haphazardly, and the sand and broken beer bottles, something flashing over the ridge, just out of sight now, out of sight and out of mind. The gods lie in wait for moments like this. What's your favorite bird? That's all right, it's not a test. It's a common raven for me. On an evening walk through Onaga Valley, I saw this pair of ravens I've seen so many times before. Over the years on this particular stretch, creosote and boulders, they've raised several rounds of children there. who then grow up and move away but come back for the holidays with their own new families to celebrate, to argue, like we always do at the holidays. But day to day is just this pair in their place, talking it over, looking at that great ball of fire rising, watching from the top branches of a gnarled old half-dead Joshua tree. You'll see them in the mornings, and you'll see them in the afternoons, buzzing your dog, cackling over the mountain bicyclists. But until this moment, their home had remained hidden. Home, a small cave, about 100 feet over the valley. Facing north, so it's cooler in the hot summertime. I got the feeling they were embarrassed that a simple human had spotted their lair after so many years of being oblivious. The venomous snake, the scorpion, the great horned owl, the howling coyotes, sirens and song dogs of the night. And sometimes for those blessed or doomed just enough, there is the yucca. The story you'll hear often goes like this. A Marine guard, a young jarhead, is working the security gate at the east entrance of the 29 Palms Marine Base Desert Training Center. A far-off corner in this massive reservation dedicated to invading other countries with the same sort of terrain. The guard hears an awful sound in the distance, and then he hears it again, and he realizes it's becoming closer. Something like a growl, something like deep, raspy breathing, coming from one side of the lonesome little guard shack, and then from the other. But circling him. He steps out into the night, his sidearm drawn. His training camp bravery and courage reduced to nothing. He looks up and there it is, standing in the moonlight, 8 feet tall, covered in black shaggy hair, a strange energy radiating around its physique. But an unbearable stench. An unbearable stench that has given the Florida Sasquatch the name Skunk Ape. But its eyes glow like red coal. The Marine is knocked unconscious by the huge, hairy arm of the monstrosity. But is found in a strange, dreamless sleep the next morning. 6 a.m. By the guard come to relieve him. the Takwis. Pronounced a lot like Takwis, the desert monster known to the Coahuila of the Agua Caliente lands. To the Coahuila, the Takwis was the original shaman, a murderous monstrosity that collected victims from the bottom of Takwis Rock. And it could manifest also as a large green fireball, hanging low in the night sky or hovering in the shadows of a nighttime canyon. In Fontana, in hard, wind-blown town in the Inland Empire, there was a famed racetrack, drag racing track, stock car, demolition derby track. It was called Mickey Thompson's Fontana Dragway. From 1955, until the dragway's closure in 1972, which followed a series of gruesome accidents and explosions, and so many fatalities that the track could no longer justify staying in business. Before that time, the spectators had for a dozen years reported a large, hairy monster running through the brush at the east end of the speedway. They called it the Speedway Monster. Assumed to be a wild man native to the foothills of the nearby San Bernardino Mountains, it had the habit of crossing the rural land during races that produced tremendous noise and violence. And in the new suburbs of Antelope Valley, encounters with the Mojave Sasquatch reached epidemic levels from the late 1960s through the late 1970s as new housing developments in Palmdale and Lancaster sprang up in the formerly wild desert around the massive Edwards Air Force Base and Skunk Works, where so many strange craft were tested and flown over these three-bedroom, two-bath stucco homes you could buy for $3,999 down. From the Antelope Valley Daily Ledger Gazette, June 1973, Bigfoot surfaces again in Palmdale, 9 Mile Canyon. The creature likes to run around houses, leaving footprints. That is its M.O. in the East Lancaster area, where enormous footprints were found around several houses. One woman reported that the creature ran around her house and scratched at her door like the dog. A small boy was sent to tell his father supper was ready, but was not found until hours later, sitting and shivering in the dark by the barn. That's what happened. He said a large hairy man had stood before him and told him he could not pass. Nerves were frayed, separate vigilante groups formed in each suburb, searching for the monster in dry desert washes, in May of 1973, search party seeking to kill the Antelope Valley Bigfoot was forced to take cover
when shots were fired its way. Another vigilante group just across the desert willows had thought they had come across the monster. The strangest tales come from Edwards Air Force Base, which spreads onto the massive Rogers dry lake bed with its miles and miles of smooth sand runways where the space shuttles used to land. Security cameras were always pointed at sensitive areas, especially in the tunnels. The tunnels that carry fuel lines and infrastructure out of the brutal desert daylight. Those cameras repeatedly captured images of desert Sasquatch moving by night. Entire families of the hairy monsters traveled the base's buildings and corridors, appearing and disappearing at will to the bewilderment of base police sent chasing after the phantasms. Base policeman Michael House filed this report. To the main base, I noticed maybe 200 to 300 yards to my left these large blue eyes. I do a lot of night hunting, and it was very strange. They were larger than anything I'd ever seen before. The blue eyes had to be about 4 inches apart and 7 feet off the ground. I stopped the truck and sat there watching them. It was too dark to see body shapes, too dark to see any definition of the thing. The blue glows proceeded toward my truck at a right angle for about 100 yards and then stopped. And along with the vision came the nauseating stench. The twilight reverie. The waxing moon bright and bulging in the desert sky. The zigzag fractures in every wounded institution. Walking past the man-made landmarks on the sandy trail on this December Eve. A pile of discarded crutches seen from a tarot card. A discount store recliner rotting in the dry heat, the fabric worn and falling at its side. Radio towers blinking red on distant mountaintops. The dog on sudden high alert as the sound of singing coyotes reaches us from a mile away. The go back to Los Angeles stickers on all the locals' cars. The strip mall spaces all for lease. 39 degrees at sundown, nighttime in the Mojave. Enjoy it while you can. Get a drink if you're dry. They don't let people out very much anymore. And someday soon, they are not gonna let us out at all. From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been a live episode of Desert Oracle Radio, coming to you tonight from the Alex Theater in the city of Glendale. My musical director could not be here tonight. Some legal troubles, so we flew him in by wire with new soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Revel in your time on this earth and enjoy tonight with Earth. Good night from the voice of the desert.
We are somewhere near the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. A couple years ago, before I was comfortable with the sound of my own voice on the air, I wrote a field note for Montana Natural History Center. It's about a sense of place in the local microscopic world.
It's time for Field Notes, brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center. At age 69, I am not satisfied unless I am learning more about the nature around me. My home is in the Timberline Creek area, about 10 miles south of the Bridger Mountains. There is a local back road that skirts the edge of an old beaver pond where I walk several times a week. I love this place so much. The things that draw me to learn more are so abundant there. Tracks of predators like mountain lion and black bear thrill me when I find them. Moose, elk, and deer browse the hawthorns and aspens, and the pond is seasonally home to sandhill cranes, ducks, and geese. Songbirds nest and sing in the willows each summer. I have even seen brook trout flickering along the shallow places of the pond. Recently, I have been thinking about the food chain that sustains the wildlife here. Where does it begin? When did it begin? What if I looked more deeply than what I can see with my eye? I want to learn about the microbiome of this wonderful area. Across the road from the pond, there is a shallow pool created by a year-round warm spring seep. I bring my field microscope, a stool, and a small table to a pullover area along the road. Beginning with some samples of moss gathered from the seep, I peer through the eyepiece to see cliffs and canyons of the moss itself. At first it seems that is all to see, but as I change the focus and shift the glass dish a bit on the microscope stage, left, right, up, down, I begin to catch a shadow whipping quickly across my field of view. A little more focus, and I begin to see a slender, worm-like shape. Perhaps a nematode? Nematodes are the most abundant animal on Earth. A 2019 study made the astonishing discovery that 4 out of every 5 animals are nematodes. Holy smokes! I also see what appears to be the shell of a larva, a relatively gigantic thing that floats immobile in this microscope. Having learned in my research that some nematodes prey on mosquito larvae, I wonder, am I seeing the remains of the nematode's latest meal? I continue to seek other forms to try to identify. Long, transparent tubes with green spirals are easy to look at because they are not moving. Are these algae? A transparent sphere that encloses several smaller spheres seems to climb along one of those tubes. Can this be a colony of bacteria? Another creature darts in and out of my field of view. Its shape reminds me of a shrimp. The head has one red dot in the center, and there are 2 antenna-like structures flaring out from the head like antlers. Later, I search a bit to identify this. An image of a copepod, a small aquatic crustacean, is a good match. I learn that copepods feed on phytoplankton, and a search for images of freshwater phytoplankton shows me an image that looks remarkably like that transparent sphere. It is called an oocystis, a type of green algae. Phew! I am learning that just one drop of pond water is irresistibly inviting me to go deeper. I have so many more questions. As I gaze at the shallows and deeper places of the pond, I wonder if the microbiome changes with depth of the water. Just today, I've noticed how autumn has dried the leaves of the willows and cast ice on the pond. How does the microbiome survive the winter? When the willows leaf out again in the spring, what would I find in the soil with my field microscope? I've learned how seasonal changes affect the birds and mammals of Timberline Creek, but how do they affect the microscopic creatures that live here? I will stay busy this year, looking for answers. Today's field note was written by Roxana McLaughlin in the Field Notes Writing Workshop at the Montana Natural History Center. I'm Allison DeYoung for Field Notes, brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center, providing natural history education for schools and the public throughout Montana. To find out about upcoming events and programs at the center, call 327-0405 or visit our website at montananaturalists.org.
Northern Exposure's Chris in the Morning had another bit of wisdom to share. It's titled Being There. He says, I think when you are somewhere, you ought to be there, because it's not about how long you stay in a place. It's about what you do while you're there. And when you go, will the place where you've been be any better off for your having been there? So, seeking to know more about where I am, I visited the Gallatin History Museum with my guide, Marlene, this week. So I'm at the Historical Museum. Is it the Gallatin County Historical Museum? With my friend Marlene, who is actually a guide here, and she's going to take us through and tell us about some of the history of Bozeman.
Okay. Well, welcome to the museum. This is the old jail, and it was designed by the architect Fred Wilson Jr., who actually designed many of the buildings in Bozeman. It was constructed in 1911 and used as a jail until 1982, and at that time it just, you know, was just too small. So they had to move.
But did they have a jail before that?
Yes, there was a jail before that. And I've read somewhere that, you know, someone wrote, with a good pair of boots, you could kick your way out of it. Mm. But it was not in this location. I don't know where. On Main Street, I think, further than that. So, the Historical Society had their foot in the door before they even left. And so immediately the Historical Society took over. And so there's a couple of interesting things about it. This is where the sheriff lived. This was his residence. And this would have been his parlor. In the back was the kitchen. You could say it was a perk of the job, but not necessarily. It was really contingent on the fact that the sheriff's wife would cook for the inmates. And if you come on over here, I can show you even that there is, we kind of covered it up, but there is a pass through where the trays would go through, and I can show you the other side where she put the trays through, and the guards would pick up the trays on the other side and take them to the individual cells. If the sheriff's wife was not willing to cook, then the duty, you know, was offered to one of the deputy's wives, and then they'd get to live here. They did get paid, but not a lot. But, you know, it obviously was a job that tied you down.
Well, yeah, I'd be 24/7 if you were living here, right?
Mm-hmm. So, moving on.
I have a question. Is this the original front?
No,
it says Gallatin State Bank.
The bank. This was from the Gallatin State Bank, which was built in 1908, but a lot of things get donated to the museum, and then we put it somewhere in the museum. This part of the museum is open for book sales. It is a bookstore for historical books. Also, there is research, and people can come and do the research for free. Their families, or just if there's, you know, some kind of event that they're interested in. I got involved because I was interested in the history of Timberline, and that's how I first ended up over here, is I wanted to know more about Timberline, which is where we live. So, moving on over, and of course there were doors, you know, that sectioned off the two areas. This is the sheriff's department office. The sheriff's private office was right here. Evidence locker. And this is when you are entering into the jail. Right in here.
It looks serious.
So
lots of bars.
Into the jail. Yeah. And this is where they would book them. And so they would take their fingerprints. They take mug shots. This display case here has some items from previous sheriffs, but a lot of things that were confiscated from prisoners, you know, knives and, you know, metal knuckles and things like that.
Yikes.
So, but the main thing we call this room is the gallows room. That's what we call this. Because if you look straight up, we can see there is, you might have to turn.
Oh, yeah, I see
there's
it.
There's a noose. And
yes. Oh, yeah, I see
the
it.
The previous jail had a gallows built behind the jail, mm-hmm. outside. Mm-hmm. And when they built this one, they wanted it to be more private. Mm-hmm. And so this is, you can see there's a platform that swings down. But only one person actually was hung with this gallows. Mm-hmm. And it was Seth Danner, who we have a picture of. Oh. I will come back to that story, but this is the one and only person that got hung in 1924. He was accused and convicted of murdering a couple. Hmm. Right here we have a visitation cell. It's a very small cell, and a lot of visitors come in and they think, oh my goodness, the cells were so small. But the visitor would be on this side, and then on the other side, there's exactly the same kind of cell where they'd lock the inmate in. Mm-hmm. This is the pass-through.
Where the food was passed?
For the trays to come through. Mm-hmm. The food trays mm-hmm. would come through. And now this is where the main section of the jail. We had a row of cells on each side. The middle was open. They called that the bullpen. Mm. This is one of the original cells. It's the pre-sentencing cell. And so a lot of times I lock people in here. I will lock you in here. Go ahead. No, I'll let you.
Okay,
lock.
Okay.
I usually joke and tell people I lost the key. Ooh.
And there's beds.
Lost the beds.
Yeah.
And I don't have the key. So that is the bad news. But the good news is there's a lever system.
Okay.
And so I'm going to go ahead and press one lever down, one lever up. I'll go ahead and press on the door.
All right.
And the cell door opens.
I'm free.
And if you can see, this would have opened a number of cells at one time.
Yeah.
And so this would have been for the cells on this side. I'm going to imagine that on the opposite side it had the exact same mm-hmm. mechanism mm-hmm. to open up cells. Now, the pre-sentencing cell was for people who haven't really been convicted. And so it was in the front because it's close to our passageway to the courthouse, which I'm going to show you next. We have on the wall some really funny cases of in the and this wasn't on the wall. This is for people now, but I really love the dynamite fishing that happened and I think it was in 1912. We had a man from Italy that came and was brought in because he was doing dynamite fishing. But I also think this is a really kind of a funny one. This is the ex-sheriff of Havre who came for bank burglary, and he was released by order on bail, and he had no trial. And that's, I think it's who you know, not really what you know, but anyway. This is a peephole. Oh. And the cells all had peepholes so that the guards could kind of keep an eye on the inmates. And it says right here, lights were on day and night. Okay, and there were no switches in the cells, so you basically slept with some light on.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, it says it's 1 and 8 pre-sentencing cells. So. Okay, I'm going to take you back kind of through here.
It sounds like they had a lot of pre-sentence cells.
Yes.
So was this a very busy, you know, place in the day, back in the day?
Well, you know, later on, of course, there was the state penitentiary, you know, and Deer Lodge. And so if you got convicted, you would be moved on to Deer Lodge. Also, I believe that's why we only had one hanging, is because, you know, execution happened on the state level, not on the county level.
Yeah, when did that change?
I don't know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So, up here is where the women were, and there are only 2 cells up there for the women. What's interesting about the women's cells is across from the 2 cells, and they each have 2 bunks in them, so 4 women could be here at one time. They have an open area, and they call that the day room, so that women could have tea, play cards, and do their handiwork.
Okay.
And a regular bathroom that had a door that shut up there. It didn't have a shower in it, just a toilet and a sink, but it did close and give you privacy. Whereas the men had one bathroom right in the back, and it had no privacy whatsoever. The shower and the toilet and the little tiny sink were all out in the open for everyone to see.
Yeah, much like I've seen in present-day jail cells.
Yeah, yeah, they just, anyway,
didn't
trust them at all.
Yeah.
So, but where I'm taking you now is, I call it the secret tunnel because a lot of people don't know about it, but, you know, it wasn't meant to be a secret. You can see the courthouse, which was also designed by Fred Wilson Jr., is right next door. Between the 2 buildings, we have a kind of a cement walkway, and you wouldn't know that there is actually a tunnel underneath. The buildings were very interconnected. With the tunnel, we also had air ducts. Originally, it didn't have its own heating system. They would blow the furnace air from the courthouse over to the jail.
Oh, wow.
And actually, the first month that it was open, right after it opened, the workmen still were working. They left their tools right next to a cell, and some of the men reached through. They were able to get tools to open it up, and there was an escape. And
did they ever catch him?
They caught 4 of them, and 2 of them, they figured, hopped the train, and they never saw him again, and they didn't pursue him.
I don't believe
they were like serious cases, and so they just didn't spend the effort to go get him. But the other 4 they did get and put him back in jail. And so where I'm going with this is when they got out, they went into the heating duct that goes over into the courthouse.
Okay.
And so they got into the courthouse. They could have stole a bunch of things at the courthouse, but they didn't. They were just, you know,
just wanted out.
They just wanted out, yeah. So, okay, this area here you can see is where we keep a lot of our old archives.
Yeah.
And it's musty. We're down low enough now that it's pretty musty. We have some old newspapers. The Avant Courier was one of them. We go back to 1871 on that one.
Yeah.
And very interesting. And we've got a lot of the courthouse documents and the sheriff's documents. You can see we've got the judge dockets and execution docket, doesn't mean execution of people, but how they, decided cases. So, be careful coming down. We're going to go another flight of stairs here. And we are now in the tunnel. And this is very scary when you have the lights off because it's pitch dark.
I bet. Yeah.
So, big metal medieval-looking gates to me. And this is the bottom of the courthouse, which they're still using. This is the maintenance room down here. Nobody's down here at the moment, but yeah. Sometimes when it rains, a little water will drip down into the hall.
How far underground are we right now?
I don't know that either. I don't think we're way under.
Yeah. I will be playing some more of that recording of my visit to the Gallatin History Museum in coming episodes. Right now, there are a couple events this week I want to tell you about. December 14th from 4 to 8 p.m., Tin Works Art invites you to join them at 719 North Ida for hot drinks, winter art activities, and holiday cheer for all. This is part of the Northside Winter Stroll. And also that same evening at 7 p.m., you can come to the KGBM music event at the Labor Temple. Admission is $9.59. Does anyone recognize that number? Well, Diamond Princess and Trust Sarah will be performing. My thanks to the Gallatin History Museum, the Montana Natural History Center, Ken Lane, and the book Chris in the Morning, Love, Life, and the Whole Karmic Enchilada by Louis Chernovic. Though I did not get any new voicemail gratitudes this week, I am grateful for you, Gallatin Valley and online listeners, for giving me your attention for this hour. As always, you can call me and leave a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 1-406-404-6246. Remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Ryan Bingham is going to take us out tonight in our Sense of Place episode with the song Where My Wild Things Are. Enjoy.
Now, so far from my hometown. Spirits guide me as I walk, along with wolves and owls, up onto this mountain where all my wild things are. This is where I sleep at night, out underneath the stars. Forgotten from my mind. There's nothing to go back to now. No turning back the time. Up upon the mountains where all my wild things are. This is where I sleep at night and play my old guitar. This is where I taste your skin and sleep under the stars.